Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio. Oh, here we go.
Never sends you an omen. A revolution just arrived like the morning. Ring the alarm, we come to wake up the snoring. They're telling you to never worry about the future. They're telling you to never worry about the torture. They're telling you that you will never see the horror. Spend it all today and we will bill you tomorrow. Three-piece suits and bank accounts in Bahamas. Wall Street crime will never send you to the slammer. Tell all the children in the arms of the mamas. The F-15 is a homicide bomber. Commercial for a pop a pill culture. Drug companies circling like a vulture. Amaraki babies with the G.I. Joe father. 10 years from now, is anybody gonna bother? Yell fire. Never come with a warning, a revolution. Everyone addicted to the same nicotine. Everyone addicted to the same gasoline. Everyone addicted to a technicolor screen. Everybody trying to get their hands on the same green. From the banks of the river to the banks of the greedy. All of the riches taken back by the needy. We come from the country and we come from the city. Play us on a record, you can play us on a CD. All the shit you've given us is fertilizer. The seeds that you planted, you can never brutalize. Now the corporation, you can never globalize it. Like Peter Tosh said, legalize it. Girls and boys hear the bass and the treble. Rumbling the speakers in and make you wanna rebel. Throw your hands up, take it to another level. And you never, ever, ever make a deal with the devil. Yeah, fire.
Michael Fronte, it is a Pinko the Bear show, and I'm glad you're stopping in Checking it out live, or maybe checking it out on the podcast edition. It can be found over at, well, at Blog Talk Radio at Hear the Monsters. I share a channel with Gwen and several of her shows. Also over at the Commons Project Network, TCPN, thecommonsprojectnetwork.com. A bunch of good lefty leftist shows over there. We'll be adding more as we find them, as we find our allies. So it is midnight Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Pacific, and if you're in Hawaii, and I know who you are, hi, Ryotan22 in the chat room. Yeah, I don't even know what time it is, like 7 o'clock there. Anyway, good to have everybody here. Al, good to see you in the chat room. By the way, I don't monitor the chat room during the show because, I don't know, I'm too busy thinking about stuff and saying stuff and trying to figure stuff out to bring to you. So I'll check in during the breaks now and then. Got a couple of new clips tonight. Oh, well, they're old clips, but I've uploaded them and we will hear them tonight. A couple of main subjects. Of course, it was Veterans Day officially about 4.5 minutes ago. It ended. It was Veterans Day. I got a few things to say about that. One of the things I won't be saying is support the troops. Don't get me started on that. Well, yeah, I'll get started and I'll finish strong, I think. I don't know. We'll see. What else? We'll get a little something from Chomsky that I thought was interesting. We've got, I don't know, and then that whole Democrats, the lesser of two evil things, I might go over one more time. Had a couple interesting discussions with people on Facebook last 48 hours. But also I want to give a shout-out to my personal Facebook page. Well, you can check me on my personal one, Brad Holhut, H-O-L-H-U-T. Or you can also go over to the Pinko the Bear Show page, the Pinko the Bear Show page. A lot of the material that I tend to use on the show, I post over there. It's not always stuff that I want to put on my personal page. Sometimes my personal page just gets a little too long, and I don't want to annoy people with too much content. But anyway, so here I am, week two and a half in New York City, uptown. I'm at 141 in a small bunker here. No, I'm in a nice little walk-up with a lovely woman that I met on the interwebs. Came to Burning Man, and things worked out very well. She invited me here, so I'm doing the show from here. She is asleep. It was very difficult to prepare for the show because it was very difficult for me to pull my paws off of this lovely woman. You know who I'm talking about, if you know me. Anyway, let's one more time. Oh, just y'all in the chat room. Okay, I was just checking. Anyway, it is a show for lefty leftists. You a little ear candy for the choir. We would like also to have Democrats, liberals. We would like to have conservatives, Tea Partiers, independents. We would like to have Green Party people. We would like to have people of all persuasions included in the show. Some of it will sound very strange to you if you're in some of those center or center-right groups, and that's okay. The first time I heard anyone say the kind of stuff that I say on this show, I was like, well, that's bullshit. My TV didn't tell me that. My daddy didn't raise me that way, all that stuff, right? And all it took was just a little bit of honest inquiry to kind of come to where I am now. And if you don't know where I'm at, I'm over there on the left. Look to your left, on the far left. See those chairs down there, those empty chairs? And then a couple of people down there further? That's us, and those chairs are for you. So you are welcome at any time. We'll leave the light on for you. We will. All right. First order of business, my friends, a little message from the Union for All Workers, the IWW.org. A bayonet is a weapon with a worker at both ends. A bayonet is a worker with a weapon. A bayonet is a weapon with a worker at both ends. Both ends. Workers fighting each other. Why the hell would a farmer on one place fight a farmer in another? Why would a steel worker in one place fight a steel worker or a farmer or a... It's insane having the poor, having the peasants, having the working class from one geographical area stick a bayonet in the poor or the working class in another geographical error. Thank you, Lord, for letting me speak in tongues. That's twice. I'm not even drunk. I haven't even touched a fresca yet. We have not begun the fresca up in here, up in Harlem, New York City. We haven't. I don't know. Could be I'm a little slap happy. It could be I'm a little tired. I don't know. But I got 2 hours to go, and we're going to get it done. But I really like this quote, and every Veterans Day I like to put it up on my wall. I don't openly slam veterans on my wall or in real life. I don't call them baby killers, and I don't spit on them. Because it'd be really stupid to spit on an ex-Marine, I'm just saying. In fact, I don't even believe that whole thing, that whole myth. I think it's a myth about spitting on the troops, personally. I mean, what kind of skinny-ass hippie in a peace sign T-shirt with no muscle or combat training would dare to spit on somebody in uniform coming back from Vietnam? I know there's Vietnam veterans out there that think it's true. They've heard it a million times, and I just don't believe it. What are they, coming back on TWA instead of some kind of military transport so you get an opportunity to spit on them? I don't believe it. Anyway, man, so when you do go to war, you're fighting for the corporate aristocracy, you're fighting for the ruling class, you are not fighting their wars in any way, shape, or form. You are the terrorist, you're leaving your land, you are not defending your country, you're defending the interests of rich people. And you're killing poor people who are defending their rich people. And it's kind of a fucked up thing. Oh, F-bombs might drop, but real bombs kill people and F-bombs don't. Just remember that. So now I'm babbling, so I don't want to do that. Let me have a shot of this fresca here. Let me see if that can help. It might help. War is a racket. It always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one international in scope. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses in lives. Now, a racket is best described, I believe, as something that is not what it seems to the majority of the people. Only a small inside group knows what it's about. I mean, it's conducted for the benefit of the very few at the expense of the very many. And out of war, a few people make huge fortunes. In the World War, the Great War, World War I, a mere handful garnered the profits of the conflict. At least 21,000 new millionaires and billionaires were made in the United States during World War I. That many admitted their huge blood gains in their income tax returns. At least that's how many. 21,000. How many other war millionaires falsified their tax returns? Well, no one knows. How many of these war millionaires shouldered a rifle, huh? I ask you that. How many of them dug a trench? How many of them knew what it meant to go hungry in a rat-infested dugout? How many of them were billionaires? How many of them spent sleepless, frightened nights ducking shells and shrapnel and machine gun bullets? How many of them parried a bayonet thrust of an enemy? How many of them were wounded and killed in battle? Let me just answer that for you, huh? Zero, zero. Not a zip, not a nothing. Out of war, nations acquire additional territory if they're victorious. They just take it. And, of course, this newly acquired territory promptly is exploited by the few, the self-same few who wrung dollars out of blood in the war. And the general public shoulders the bill. And what is this bill, huh? This bill renders a horrible accounting, newly placed gravestones, mangled bodies, shattered minds, broken hearts and homes, economic instability, depression, and all its attendant miseries, backbreaking taxation for generations and generations. And for a great many years as a soldier, I had a suspicion that war was a racket. Not until I retired to civil life did I fully realize it. Now that I see the international war clouds gathering, now he's talking about World War One. No, he's talking about World War Two. As I see the international war clouds gathering as they are today, I must face it and speak out. Again, they're choosing sides. France and Russia met and agreed to stand side by side. Italy and Austria hurried to make a similar agreement. And then Poland and Germany cast sheep eyes at each other, forgetting for the nonce. That's just a one unique occasion. Forgetting for the one unique occasion their dispute over the Polish corridor. The assassination of King Alexander of Yugoslavia complicated matters. Yugoslavia, Hungary, long bitter enemies were almost at each other's throats. Now, Italy was ready to jump in, but France was waiting. So was Czechoslovakia. All of them are looking ahead to war. Not the people, mind you, not the people. Those who fight and pay and die. Only those who foment wars and remain safely at home to profit. Make money, 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 make money, 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 make money, money. There are 40 million men under arms in the world today, and this is pre-World War II, it's way more than that now. And our statesmen and diplomats have the temerity to say that war is not in the making. Hell's fucking bells. Okay, I added the fucking because I thought it was proper. There are 40 million men being trained to be dancers. Not in Italy, to be sure. Premier Mussolini knows what they're being trained for. He at least is frank enough to speak out. Just the other day, El Duce, in International Conciliation, the publication of the Carnegie Endowment for the International Peace, he said this, quote, and above all, now he's got an Italian accent, and I kind of got a Southern one, so just bear with me. I'm not really an actor. Just saying. And above all, fascism, the more it considers and observes the future and development of humanity, quite apart from the political considerations of the moment, believes neither in the possibility nor the utility of perpetual peace. War alone brings up to its highest tension all human energy and puts the stamp of nobility upon the people who have the courage to meet it. Jesus Christ. Oh, my dog. Really? Mussolini. This is the face of fascism right here. Doesn't believe in the possibility or the utility of perpetual peace. If you want to bring up the human energy to its highest tension, if you want to put a stamp of nobility upon the people who have the courage to meet it, well, you send them to war. That kind of reminds me of Kissinger's quote. What is that? I don't have it in front of me, but soldiers are dumb, stupid animals to be used in foreign policy. Anyway, back to Mr. Well, I should say General, Major General Smedley Butler, the most decorated general at his time. Undoubtedly, Mussolini means exactly what he says. His well-trained army, his great fleet of planes, and even his navy are ready for war, anxious for it, apparently. His recent stand at the side of Hungary in the latter's dispute with Yugoslavia showed that. And the hurried mobilization of his troops on the Austrian border after the assassination of Dollfuss showed it too. There are others in Europe too whose saber-rattling presages war sooner or later. Herr Hitler, with his rearming Germany and his constant demands for more and more arms, is an equal, if not greater, menace to peace. France only recently increased the term of military service for its youth from a year to 18 months. That's almost double, yo. Almost double, yo. But they ain't getting ready for no war. Yes, all over, nations are camping in their arms. The mad dogs of Europe are on the loose. In the Orient, the maneuvering is more adroit. Back in 1982, oh my gosh. I'm not going to read the rest of this, but it goes on and on. I think you get the point. War is a racket. Yeah, they're getting ready for another war. Why shouldn't they? Because it pays. You get paid if you're in the ruling class. You get paid if you're in the capital class, the imperialist class. You, if you're at the top of the pyramid, you get paid when there's a war, and you don't have to fight it. Happy fucking Veterans Day. But what does it profit the men who are killed? What does it profit their mothers and sisters, their wives and their sweethearts? What does it profit their children? What does it profit anyone except the very few to whom war means huge profits? And yeah, what does it profit the nation? At any rate, so I was reading the first chapter of it. It's just a 13-page booklet. Major General Smedley Butler, the most decorated general at that time in the run-up to World War II. He had done his service in South America and Central America, the Philippines, and other places, the Caribbean, in service to the United Fruit Company, and I don't know, was it Texaco or one of the other, Shell Oil, I don't know. But war is a racket, and it's always been a racket, and that racket is thing, you know, a racket is that thing where the majority of the people just don't understand it. Only a few people, people on the inside, know what it's about. I'm belaboring the point. I can feel it. But my uncle served in war. Shut the fuck up! But my granddaddy, shut the fuck up! Everybody has relatives. Everybody's done it or known somebody that's done it. It doesn't make it right. Well, I was raised, shut the fuck up. Well, I knew a sailor who had a wife and a dog and a kid, and he was really helpful. Shut up. Doesn't matter. It's a choice. It's a job choice. It's not good. Not healthy. It's not right. Who makes the prophets? He's got about five chapters here. Who makes the prophets? Well, of course, we know who makes the prophets. It's interesting, though. He runs down the profiteers from World War One. Names a bunch of different countries, the folks who make the gunpowder, the DuPonts, where they were before the war, where they were after in terms of profit. U.S. Steel, where they were, where they were after. He runs them all. Well, he doesn't run them all down, but a bunch of them. Little company out in Utah doing a little copper mining, Utah Copper. Before and after, a little picture of that. He just goes on and on and on and on. And you can see where all these rich motherfuckers were making money. Where does that money come from, huh? Where does that money come from? Oh, war pays. It paid them. It paid Central Leather Company. It paid International Nickel Company. Because you can't have a war without nickel. Well, back then. American Sugar Refining Company, it paid them. And on and on. Oh, and we haven't even got into the bankers. Do I even need to say anything about the bankers? See, I wasn't sure if I was in the mood for this, but obviously I am because I'm getting a little worked up. Somebody had to produce a bunch of mosquito netting. That would be another company. How about all those horses, huh? How many millions and millions of horses? Somebody had to make them saddles. Hey, war is good for the economy. Oh, really? Let's put all this money into the war, into a bomb, into an artillery shell, into a saddle, into a horse, into some horse feed. We use it one time and it gets destroyed. But some workers back home made a wage, not the full value of what they've created. How about we take that money and put it into schools? How about we put it into, I don't know, pick it, healthcare? How about we put it into something that continues to give back to society instead of just takes, takes, and takes. Oh, and don't forget the airplane, the engine manufacturers. They made a shit ton of money. And t-shirts. Every soldier needs a t-shirt. You know, t-shirts back then, they cost about 14 cents to make. Now, your Uncle Sam, my Uncle Sam, it was, you know, uncle through birth, but not really like my favorite uncle. Uncle Sam paid 30 cents, 40 cents for these 14 cent t-shirts. Does any of this sound familiar? Have you been following the saga of Halliburton? Have you been following the saga of any of these, well, I don't know, Blackwater, Z, whatever they call themselves today? The same story over and 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 over again. But who pays the bills, guys, huh? Who pays the bills, girls, huh? Well, the people who are reaping the profits don't pay the bills. You and I pay the bills. What is that comedy? I wish I could remember it right now. There's a little comedy bit about who pays the bills in America. The very rich don't pay the bills. Oh, that's right. The middle class pays all the bills. The working class, they pay some of the bills. And then they have the working poor or the just plain old poor around just to scare the shit out of the middle class, right? Look at all those takers. I'm a producer. Sure you are. The soldiers pay the biggest part of the bill. The soldiers pay the biggest part of the bill. And if you don't believe it, just go to any cemetery on any of the battlefields abroad or any veterans hospital here in the United States. Just, go check it out. So you got boys with just normal points, and they're looking, they want to drink beer and chase pussy and just have a good time and figure out their lives and who do they want to be with and what do they want to do, and they're gonna work in the mill and they're gonna go to the city and la la la. Just pull them out, put a bayonet in their hand, and tell them to kill another working man. It's a crime. It's a crime. It's a shame. It's a crying shame. It's not good. Support our troops. Well, you know what? I'm sure the good Germans said the same thing. Well, I don't really agree with Hitler's policies, but we should support the troops. Down in Central America, down in the 80s, during Reagan's dirty wars, you got the death squads running around just like killing priests and nuns and labor activists and just, peasants. Well, I don't support the government's policies, but I do support the troops. That's nice. That's real nice. Anyway, there's a few more chapters, and he talks about how to smash the racket, and he lays out a 3-point plan. I mean, it's nice and everything. I mean, I'm not going to go through the explanation of it all. It is only a 13-page booklet. I don't have that kind of time because I got shit to do. But in his what to do section, basically it summarizes it this way. We got to take the profit out of war. There won't be no more war if there ain't no more profit. Oh, there might be a bar fight. There might be a shooting. There might be all sorts of, there might be a gang thing, but not, organized millions of people fighting each other kind of gang thing. And here's the one, that's a no-brainer. You got to take the profit out of war, but this one, you got to let the people who fight the wars decide whether or not they would go to war. And if you've ever read anything by David Swanson, or if you've ever thought about the situation, clearly, you would understand that never in the history of any war, anywhere, at any time, I'm going to go ahead and say on any planet, but let's just limit it to this planet. Nowhere, no how, anywhere, anytime, that the young people who are expected to fight the wars, full information, would have voted to go to war. They get duped. They go all the time. They get conscripted. They get duped, lied to, propagandized, hypnotized, mesmerized, lobotomized. They get all that stuff. So they do, but they never say, well, we thought about it rationally. We got all the full information that we need. We discussed it thoroughly. And yeah, let's go kill these people over there. That never happens. Take the profit out of war. Let the people who fight the war, the young ones, decide. And how about this? If we got to have a military, man, you can make a case for that. We must limit our military defensive purposes only. Defensive purposes only. That doesn't mean a first strike offensively because you're playing defense because you kind of think maybe sort of down the road they might do something to you somewhere. No. Defensively only. And there's a chapter 5, To Hell with War. I mean, it doesn't matter. I think you all ought to read it. War is a racket. I'm not even going to give you the website because there's a million of them. Just Google. Google machine. War is a racket. It's a racket, I tell you. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? I don't know. Don't ask me. I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. Or I just ain't a marching anymore. I think we need to take a break. It is the Pink on the Bear Show. Here's a little Phil Oaks. I'll see you in about 2.5 minutes. Peace.
Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British War. The young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I killed my share of engines in a thousand different fights. I was there at the little big horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more a dying, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the war, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with a saber and a gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I stole California from the Mexican land, fought in the bloody Civil War. Yes, I even killed my brothers and so many others, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men and now they want me back again, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with a saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese sky, set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't a marching anymore. Now the labor leaders screaming when they close the missile plant. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it reason, but I ain't a marching anymore. No,
yeah, I do like that, Phil Oaks. I am watching.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. In this world there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate. We think too much and feel too little. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness. Without these qualities, life will be violent. No, we'll be lost. Do not despair. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die. Dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. Will return to the people. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world to do away with greed. Now let us fight to free the world. Give yourselves to brutes, men who despise you, enslave you, tell you what to do, what to think and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men, with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines, you are men. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful. Let us use the power. Do not despair. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. Let us all unite.
I do like that little Charlie Chaplin remix there. The great dictator speech, kind of chopped up and auto-tuned. It is Pinko the Bear Show, That's what I do. I take other people's stuff and I throw it out there, and I don't know. I hope you like it. I know a lot of the themes are the same, but the themes are important. Say them the same way, you know, 20 different ways all year long. But hey, I think they're important, and people need to hear it. I appreciate the choir that shows up. I appreciate the folks that listen in the podcast edition, because not everybody can be up late with Pink on the Bear. So one of my favorite writers is over at Global Research. I do believe he lives in Chicago. It's Stephen Lindemann, and he can be real direct, and he can be real raw, but he can be real right. If I was to guess, I'd say he's 90% right. He's not up in the Noam Chomsky range, that 99 or 100% range. He's not in the Chris Hedges range at 75 to 90, 85. You know, you put your range on these people. Because you check your math, you check their math, and you figure out, well, is he telling the truth? Well, he normally does. But I like Stephen, and he can be harsh, but that's okay, because I think that's why I like him. But if you haven't read him over at Global Research, you can see him there. That's Stephen with a PH. He's also Stephen Lindemann. He's also often over at Addison DePitt's place, Patrice Granville, thegranvillepost.com. So he had a little something to say this year about Veterans Day. I'll do this, and then I want to play a clip from a vet from Iraq Veterans Against the War that's only 4 minutes long, that I think is kind of encapsulates my feelings and what I hope would be everybody's feelings about this subject. So Stephen says some people confuse Veterans Day with Memorial Day. They really do. They're both federal holidays. Memorial Day remembers combat-related dead service personnel. And Veterans Day is all about the peacetime veterans. It largely thanks living veterans, and it does so disingenuously. Veterans Day was formerly Armistice Day. Armistice Day. Ooh, that's a big word. People can't handle that. We got to change that shit. It commemorates the war to end all wars. That would be World War One. Back in 1918, with guns on both sides, they largely fell silent. They did so on the 11th hour of the 11th day on the 11th month. So the remembrance began 1919, Woodrow Wilson, piece of shit. This is what he said. To us in America, the reflection of Armistice Day will be filled with solemn pride in the heroism of those who died in the country's service, and with gratitude for the victory, both because of the thing from which it has freed us and because of the opportunity it has given America to show her sympathy with peace and justice in the councils of nations. Fuck you, Woodrow Wilson, you red baiting, red scaring motherfucker. Just saying. In 1938, Congress declared Armistice Day. It was a legal holiday, and it was a day dedicated to the cause of world peace. You got that? In 1938, it was a day to be dedicated to the cause of world peace, and to be thereafter celebrated and known as Armistice Day. Now, I just ask you to look around your Facebook walls, and see how many people said anything about a day about world peace. No one. Nothing. Zip. Nada. Zilch. Any other word you can think that means zero. Oh, zero. There you go. Everybody's conflated it with Memorial Day. Veterans Day is not Memorial Day. In 1954... Congress changed the name. So we got Eisenhower. He signed it. So no longer would Armistice Day be Armistice Day. It would be Veterans Day. How many years did that take? Oh, 38 to 54. You do the math. I might have been drinking during the break. So he issued a presidential order. It called on VA officials to form a Veterans Day National Committee. It mandated them to organize and oversee a National Remembrance Day. We got parades and public ceremonies. But they ignore what's most important, folks. They ignore what's most important, the celebration of those who made it home. They glorify the wars. You see, America doesn't wage wars for peace. Washington would consider that abhorrent. Veterans Day, folks. Veterans Day dishonors living and dead veterans. It ignores longstanding U.S. imperial lawlessness. And what it does, it takes a little airbrush, like the Playboy people. It just takes a little airbrush, a huge airbrush from history. It airbrushes decades of what most mattered or what matters most, depending on how you like to hear it in your ears. It includes militarism, raw aggression, permanent wars on humanity, mass killing and destruction, exploiting resources and people, seeking unchallenged global dominance, and creating unspeakable human misery. That's what it does. And depravity defines America's agenda. And war is a national obsession. It's a long-standing obsession, addiction. And it's got nothing to do with national security, nothing to do with national security. It's not about making the world safe for democracy, as Wilson said. You and I, all Americans, are systematically lied to. Kids enlist on false pretenses. They are lied to. Propaganda glorifies the wars in name of peace. They are lied to. Patriotism, my friends, is the last refuge of scoundrels. That is not a lie. That's the truth. So we got nations that are destroyed to liberate them. They get plundered, and we just call it economic development. We have imperial lawlessness, and we call it humanitarian intervention. Libya, anyone? And, of course, the young people, they're just cannon fodder. Get on out there. They're used, they're abused, they're ignored. When they come home, well, they're just ignored some more. America's imperial appetite is, well, pretty much insatiable. One war follows another. One nation is ravaged and destroyed, one at a time, or sometimes in multiples, you know. Veterans Day, a real Veterans Day, should condemn the wars. It should actually talk about and feature and highlight the ways we can actually end the wars. And here's a catchphrase for Veterans Day. How about never again? Everybody loves never again. Never forget. Never again. Never forget. Never again. Never forget. Hey, how about we use that for Veterans Day? Never forget how fucked up these wars are, fought on behalf of the ruling class. Just saying. And Lincoln, right? Lincoln, Gettysburg Address, right? We here resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth, blah de de blah de de blah de de blah. So the war went on for months longer. horrible cycle. The violence continues. Remembrance should be contrition. Remembrance should be, well, it should pledge peace. Remembrance should honor anti-war activism. Michael Preisner, anyone? I got a clip from him coming up. Remembrance should turn swords into plowshares. Remembrance should back rhetoric with policy. It should combine veterans and memorial days. And what it should do is it should change the name. It should change them to Peace Day. How does that sound? Peace Day. Never forget the horrors of war. Today is Peace Day. Everybody gets the day off with triple the pay. That'll be on my platform if I ever run for president. It should pledge never again, and it should fucking mean it. Peace Day. Now, Stephen's article did talk about Obama's weekly address and what he said to this and that. I don't care. I just can't stomach quoting him in all his lies. Blah-de-de, 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 blah. But it really goes on and on. It talks about PTSD. Talks about the treatment when they get home. Not from hippies spitting on them, but from the VA. But I will say the VA is the best, that we have in this country. It's got its problems, like ordering its doctors not to diagnose PTSD because, well, it's way too expensive. But it's a really good article. I'd like people to see it. I'll put it in the chat room. And he talks about the depression, the poverty, the unemployment, the homelessness, the hunger, all of this on the vets. How they suffer out of sight, out of mind. How they die the same way, out of sight, out of mind, and how America treats its own with disdain. You can read it. I put it in the chat room. You can bookmark it. Don't read it while the show is on. You can read it after the show. But Stephen is Stephen Lendon. He lives in Chicago. And he's got a book called Banker Occupation, Waging Financial War on Humanity. That's his new book. I have not read it. I basically just read his pieces that I find either in Global Research or over at thegranvillepost.com. It is the Pink of the Bear Show. I don't want to depress everybody with this stuff, but hey, you know. I'm gonna take a quick break, and when I come back, we're going to talk about something completely different, okay? 4 minutes and 26 seconds. Grab a cocktail. Grab a smoke. Get yourself pumped up.
For the cash, see, you're the criminal.
Ha-ha! Quality. Quality there from our friends at Rage Against the Machine, man. One day is lions. So I've got this article called Don't Thank Me. Don't Thank Me. Don't Thank Me for My Service. And I like it a lot. I think I posted it on my personal page, so some of you may have seen it. If not, I just want to share. I did this a year ago, I think, because it came out in 2012. I think I did it last year, but I want to do it again. Having a little trouble with my headset. Check. All right, so yeah, my headset's kind of screwy, but hopefully the microphone's fine. I don't want to appear disrespectful. Ungrateful, but we should meet on the street one day, or should we meet on the street one day, do say hello, or fine day, or other such nicety, but please do not thank me for my service as a United States Marine, and I make this request because my service, as you refer to it, was basically either to train to become a killer or to actually kill people and blow shit up. Now, this reminds me of my friend, Joe, if you're listening. The Devils of Eden, that's the name of the book my friend Joe from Reno wrote after he got back from Afghanistan, went to UNR. We had a book signing and such, and a hell of a good guy. And he understands this completely. My job was basically to become a killer, or, you know, if I got the actual opportunity, to kill people and blow shit up. Now, that's something, it's not something for which a person should be proud nor thanked. In fact, it's regrettable, and for me, it's a source of guilt and shame, something I'll have to live with for the rest of my life, as the past cannot be undone. So when you thank me for my service, it actually disturbs me. It disturbs me a lot. First off, it brings to mind my wasted youth and my lost innocence, and the horrible and unnecessary deaths of good friends and comrades. And second, it reminds me of my responsibility and culpability for the pain and suffering I caused innocent people. Again, something I'd rather forget, but I cannot. Third, it reinforces my belief that you have absolutely no fucking idea about the nature and the realities of the wars in Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, because if you did, you would understand that thanks are inappropriate. Fourth, it reminds me that many of those who feel the need to offer thanks were apathetic about it, or even supportive of the war, while they refused to participate themselves or did little or nothing to end it. And lastly, and if you're counting, folks, this is number five. And lastly, I have to admit that I doubt the sincerity of these expressions of support, these expressions of supposed gratitude, as thank you for your service is just something to say, not because you care about what I did or what I sacrificed, but only to demonstrate your supposed good character or patriotism or support for members of the military and veterans. In making this request that you not do this shit, not to be thanked for my service, I am, of course, expressing only my opinion, and I would say opinions of a lot of other people, and perhaps my idiosyncrasies. I make no claim to be speaking for other veterans. I would, however, wager a large shit ton of money that maybe, perhaps even most who have experienced the horrors of war have the courage and presence of mind to think about and evaluate what the war they served in was truly about, would understand and probably concur with this request. Those veterans, however, who may not agree, who cling to the mythology of heroism, glory, honor, and nobility of war, do so in large measure from fear. Fear that acknowledging war's reality would somehow diminish their sacrifice and the sacrifices of those whose lives were lost. Perhaps, understandably, they view such sacrifices and losses difficult enough to live with when they had value and purpose, and as intolerable if they were misguided and unnecessary. To these brothers and sisters, I would offer the following questions and observations for them to ponder. Here we go. Are you ready? Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready? Are you ready? First, what was accomplished by your sacrifice, by the waste of lives and treasure in Vietnam? Huh? What was it? What was accomplished? Well, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, what was accomplished? Where is the honor? Where is the glory, the nobility in your killing and dying for greed, incompetence, and para-fucking Nora? Secondly, the mythology that you cling to for comfort is a tool, folks. It is a tool of the political leaders to make war palatable, to garner support for their militarism and abandonment of diplomacy. It is what motivates future idealistic, perhaps naive, young people to heed the call. Excuse me, let me turn this microphone off while I sneeze really hard. I'm just playing with you. I didn't have to sneeze. Yeah, it's what motivates idealistic, naive young people to heed the call to seek honor and glory by enlisting in the military to fight for a cause that they have been deceived into believing is right, just, and necessary. But which is, in reality, a string of wars for corporate greed, power, and global hegemony. All who are touched by war are tainted and require readjustment. Perhaps they require rehabilitation. But in order to truly come home from war, to make the perilous journey of healing, one must face the realities of one's own war experience head on, as no healing is possible from fantasy. No healing is possible from fantasy, myth, rationalization, and or distortion of truth. So, in the future, folks, in the future, if you really insist on thanking me for something, please do not thank me for the 8 years I spent as a Marine, but for the 45 or so years following my discharge from the military that I have spent as an activist fighting for human rights. Thank me for being an activist for my remaining 45 years fighting for social justice and an end to the insanity of war. And honestly, frankly, you know what? I would just prefer this. Come up to me, say hello, hey, fine day. Pick a nicety, any nicety. Do something like that. Because you see, my activism all these years, it doesn't warrant praise or merits. It's not something that I choose to do. Rather, I do it because I must. I have to. And maybe, I don't know, perhaps it's a penance for my culpability for the sacrilege of war. And if you truly, if you really, truly want to demonstrate your good character, I shouldn't say that sarcastically, if you want to demonstrate your good character, if you want to demonstrate your patriotism, your support for the troops and for the veterans, rather than merely mouth meaningless expressions of gratitude for something you truly don't understand or care about much, do something. Do something meaningful. Do something real. Do what is truly in the interest of this nation and of those victimized by war. What do you mean, do something? Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what to do. Make some fucking demands. Make some demands. Demand, just for example, demand an immediate end to the corporate takeover of our democracy and to the undue influence of the military-industrial congressional complex. Demand. You want to know about demands? Demand some fucking sanity in the Pentagon spending and the reallocation of finite resources to people-focused programs such as, oh, I don't know, healthcare, education, jobs, rather than to a single program of killing and destruction. You want to do something? How about you demand an immediate end to the wars for corporate profit, greed, power, and hegemony? Demand that we adhere to the Constitution and international law. We ain't the only country on this planet, but I digress. You want to do something? Demand accountability. Demand accountability for those who make war easily and care more for wealth, profit, and power than for the national interest or for the welfare of their fellow human beings. And finally, demand the troops be brought home right fucking now. And demand that they be adequately treated and cared for when they return. So, should we meet on the street one day, do say hello or fine day as you talk to me about your efforts to make this country and the world a better and more peaceful place in which to live. If you do that, I would be happy to thank you. I would be happy to thank you, civilian, for your service. Emilio, he goes by the name Mac Bica, PhD, he's a professor of philosophy at the School of Visual Arts in New York City, where I am currently located. He's a former Marine officer, Vietnam vet, longtime activist for peace and social justice. And he's also the coordinator of the Long Island chapter of Veterans for Peace. This came out, Sunday, the 3rd, June, 2012. I read it last year on the show. I thought it was worth reading again. And I hope you liked it. I hope you liked it. I hope you liked it a lot. And you got it.
And I tried hard to be proud of my service, but all I could feel was shame. And racism could no longer mask the reality of the occupation. These were people. These were human beings. I've since been plagued by guilt anytime I see an elderly man, like the one who couldn't walk, who we rolled onto a stretcher and told the Iraqi police to take him away. I feel guilt anytime I see a mother with her children, like the one who cried hysterically and screamed that we are worse than Saddam as we forced her from her home. I feel guilt anytime I see a young girl, like the one I grabbed by the arm and dragged into the street. We were told we were fighting terrorists. The real terrorist was me, and the real terrorism is just occupation. Racism within the military has long been an important tool to justify the destruction and occupation of another country. It has long been used to justify the killing, subjugation, and torture of another people. Racism is a vital weapon employed by this government. It is more important weapon than a rifle, a tank, a bomber, or a battleship. It is more destructive than an artillery shell, or a bunker buster, or a Tomahawk missile. While those weapons are created and owned by this government, they are harmless without people willing to use them. Those who send us to war do not have to pull a trigger or lob a mortar round. They do not have to fight the war, they merely have to sell the war. They need a public who is willing to send their soldiers into harm's way. They need soldiers who are willing to kill and be killed without question. They can spend millions on a single bomb, but that bomb only becomes a weapon when the ranks in the military are willing to follow orders to use it. They can send every last soldier anywhere on earth, but there will only be a war if soldiers are willing to fight. And the ruling class, the billionaires who profit from human suffering, care only about expanding their wealth, controlling the world economy. Understand that their power lies only in their ability to convince us that war, oppression, and exploitation is in our interest. They understand that their wealth is dependent on their ability to convince the working class to die to control the market of another country. And convincing us to kill and die is based on their ability to make us think that we are somehow superior. Soldiers, sailors, marines, airmen have nothing to gain from this occupation. The vast majority of people living in the U.S. have nothing to gain from this occupation. In fact, not only do we have nothing to gain, but we suffer more because of it. We lose limbs, endure trauma, and give our lives. Our families have to watch flag-draped coffins lowered into the earth. Millions in this country without health care, jobs, or access to education must watch this government squander over $450 million a day on this occupation. Poor and working people in this country are sent to kill poor and working people in another country to make the rich richer. And without racism, soldiers would realize that they have more in common with the Iraqi people than they do with the billionaires who send us to war. I threw families onto the street in Iraq, only to come home and find families thrown onto the street in this country, in this tragic and unnecessary foreclosure crisis. We need to wake up and realize that our real enemies are not in some distant land. They're not people whose names we don't know and cultures we don't understand. The enemy is people we know very well and people we can identify. The enemy is a system that wages war when it's profitable. The enemy is the CEOs who lay us off from our jobs when it's profitable. It's the insurance companies who deny us health care when it's profitable. It's the banks who take away our homes when it's profitable. Our enemy is not 5,000 miles away. They are right here at home. If we organize and fight with our sisters and brothers, we can stop this war, we can stop this government, and we can create a better world.
Man, that's Michael Preisner from, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years ago. I played on the show a few times. When I was in the show 5 nights a week, 2 hours a night, I must have played it once a week at least for a couple of years, because this is a sickler with me. And Michael has it right. My friend Joe Hallsworth, the Hallsworth. The book is called The Devils of Eden. I don't know, you can get it for like $14 on Amazon. I've got a copy. Ooh, a signed copy. I love Joe. But he's exactly right. He told the story. He was a teenager. 9/11 happened. He saw it. He's like, oh, fuck these tall heads. Gung-ho, gung-ho. He came from a privileged background. Nobody was in the military. No, you have to go to grad school. And he's like, no, fuck it. I'm going to be an airborne ranger. And he did it. And then he realized what kind of environment he was in and what kind of people he was you know, working, if you can call it work, working with. And then he was deployed to a fire base in Afghanistan, and he saw the behavior and the attitude, and he saw the faces of the so-called enemy or even the civilian population, and he saw some really shitty shit, and he wrote about it in this book. It's called The Devils of Eden. And if you are listening to this program and you have an extra $14, you know, $3, $4, $5 will go to him. The rest will go to the publisher. You know, that's fine. Do it. Do it. Read it. He's not on board with the empire anymore. He ain't going to go to war no more. Just like Phil Oakes sang, 40 years ago. I played at the top of the show. But so the chat room is open, and it's a little quiet in there, but John is in there. Hey, what's up? And he's like, well, you know, let's not fault them for the choices they made. Let's not fault the troops for the choices they made. If I wanted to be argumentative, I would say, well, you're throwing out a straw man. I am not faulting them, young people, for the choices they made. I am pointing out, observing what is actually happening. But I think I understand the sentiment. When you're young, when you don't know any better, when you've been brought up in a jingoistic, nationalistic, or brought up in a military family, and you're brought up in a kind of a propaganda bubble, when you're brought up in that situation, you don't know any better. And you're like, yeah, okay, I'll do this. Yeah, that sounds good, man. We got enemies. I'm going to be a hero. Or at least I'm going to serve. Maybe there won't be a war. I'll serve and I'll get some free education money. I get that. 17, 18, 19, 20, maybe 21 if you're like a little bit slow. But we live in the age of the internet. We live in an age of information, the information superhighway. We live in an age where, dude, if you want to know something, don't ask somebody, Google it. And if you get a bunch of different conflicting results, then maybe you ask people and you make an assessment. So when you're really young, you don't know anything. You're looking for like pussy and beer. Or if you're a girl, I'm looking for a husband and a baby daddy. I don't know what. Oh, that's so sexist. Well, maybe so. I've seen it my whole life. Just doing the numbers. But there's things that people are looking for. And then a liar comes along called a salesman who, well, he's a recruiter by another name. Liar, salesman, recruiter for the military industrial complex. And they promise all this shit and they tell you a bunch of lies. And then you go to the movies to see the Transformers and you see a, you know, ads for B, Army of One, or whatever the current thing is. And I don't know, what is it? What's that horrible band? Nickelback is doing some pro-rock Join the Army song. Right? You've seen these. So, oh, that's pretty good. I can be Starship Troopers. I'm going to go join the Starship Troopers. And you're just like all so excited when you should have been joining Star Trek, not Starship Troopers. Star Trek, socialist society, still had a military because they had shit to take care of. Starship Troopers, no, not so much. Just saying. So, Finko, don't be so hard. on these people that made these choices. Well, you know what? I made one of those choices too. There was an economic draft on after I graduated from college because why? We had Reagan's depression. It was the second recession in 8 years under Reagan. I was majoring in finance, going to go to Wall Street. This is before the movie Wall Street came out. By the time I had graduated, could not find a job. The movie Wall Street came out. It was all perfectly clear. We had the SNL crisis. Shit was going down. If you had a finance degree, it was fucking worthless. I was in Texas, overbuilt, real estate. Oil went from $30 a barrel to $10 a barrel. Oh, my God. And a recruiter came along and said, oh, Brad, that's my real name. Bradley, have you ever thought about serving the United States government? Maybe in the Navy? Think, no, why would I want to go blow shit up? Well, we have in the Navy, we have retail stores. We have tax accountants. We have finance. We have, you know, CFOs. They didn't use the word back then. But she gave me this whole line. Oh, really? The economy sucks. I could go in the Navy for a couple of, four years. I could go in the Navy for 4 years. I could get some experience. And when I come out, maybe this, malaise will be over and maybe I'll get a job. And then I'll make a bunch of money and have 2.5 kids and blah, 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 and keep shopping at Neiman Marcus and Kmart because, you know, you got to balance the shit. And so my recruiter sold me on it, and I signed up, and it was, I want to tell you, it was bullshit. It was bullshit. So there it was. I don't know how I get into the personal stories, but I do that. But there it was. And I realized that these people that I was in training with were not heroes. They weren't even heroes in waiting. They were just doofs. Just regular people, just like me and everybody else. I need a job. I'll learn how to march. I'll say yes or no, sir. I'll get the personality slapped out of my nuts, my mouth, whatever the term is. And we did it, and it sucked. But we got paid. Luckily, I got an early out with medical. So, yeah, I give the young ones a pass. If you're young and economically disadvantaged, we call that We call that an economic draft. We don't have a regular draft anymore. We have an economic draft. I get that. I even get friends like Joe, young. They got shocked. They heard some information that was untrue, and they said, fuck it, let me go. Let me go kill some towel heads, some sand niggas. But the people I really, really respect after all this time, it's been, 12, 13 years, seriously? It's been a long time. The people I respect are the people like Michael Preisner, who you just heard on this program, Iraqi war vet. And on his second deployment said, no, I'm not going. He sat down on the tarmac and said, fuck it, I'm not going. They arrested him, put him in the brig, blah, 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 discharged him. And now he's an outspoken critic of, all the wars. Because he understands that war is a racket. War is a fucking racket. Which reminds me, I wanted to get to this. I didn't want to spend 2 hours on this. I really didn't. But that's how this show goes. You just kind of wing it and do it, and hopefully it makes sense. So I self-identify as a left libertarian, as an anarchist, as a socialist, as an anarcho-communist, and as an anti-state communist. At the root of all of that, there's a bunch of labels and slight differences, but at the root is anarchism. And I found this internet meme the other day that I really, really liked. I'm going to have some Fresca. Hang on, because this is going to be good. Take a drink. Because I don't necessarily like to drink alone. So I saw this the other day. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. And it says this. Hey. Well, it doesn't say hey. I'm going to say it. I'm going to paraphrase it because that's what I do. Hey. Look, anarchists didn't try to carry out the genocide against the Armenians in Turkey. They did not deliberately starve millions of Ukrainians. They didn't create a system of death camps to kill the Jews. Anarchists, no. They didn't try to kill the gypsies, the slaves in Europe. They didn't, you know what they didn't do? They didn't try to firebomb the, I don't know, 20, 40, 60, 80 German and Japanese cities. Firebomb, like melt everybody. They didn't try to do that. They didn't do it. They didn't try to do it. They didn't drop a nuclear fucking bomb. They did not drop nuclear bombs on two of those cities in Japan. Anarchists, my friends, did not carry out what they called the Great Leap Forward. That was in China. And it killed, really, scores of millions of Chinese, 20, 40, 60, 80, I don't know. Anarchists didn't attempt to kill everybody with any appreciable education in Cambodia. Oh, you're a doctor? Fuck you, you're dead. That wasn't anarchists. Oh, you went to fifth grade? Fuck you, you're dead. That wasn't anarchists. Anarchists didn't launch one aggressive war after another. Anarchists didn't implement trade sanctions. Remember those ones in Iraq that killed maybe 500,000 Iraqi children? And if you don't believe me, just, I don't know, Google search 500,000 Iraqi children sanctions and Albrecht, the Secretary of State. Well, I think it's worth it. She thought it was worth it that we had a policy that helped to change the regime in Iraq, and it killed 500,000. That's a 500,000 kids. It's worth it. No, folks. When you're debating between anarchists and statists, I don't care if they're pro-commie statists or pro-democracy statists or pro-King of England or France or Denmark statists. When you're debating between anarchists and statists, the burden of proof clearly rests on those who place their trust in the state. Anarchists didn't do that shit. Armenians, Ukrainians, Jews, gypsies, slaves, citizens, men, women, and children of Germany, Japan, nuclear bombs, the Great Leap Forward, the killing fields of Cambodia, one war of aggression after another. Iraq. No. Libya. Just add them up. Add them up. Where did the anarchists stand? Where did the statists stand? Not only where did they stand, what did they fucking do? What did they do? Did the anarchists do any of that? Or did the statists do any of that? So when you hear about anarchy being like some bad fucking thing, some horrible thing, some, oh, it's mayhem, it's cats and dogs living together, it's chaos. No. Anarchy's mayhem is wholly conjectural. It is simply made up. It's bullshit. It's propaganda. It's nonsense. But the state, the state's mayhem, the state's killing, totally undeniable. Totally undeniable, factually horrendous. Promise you that. No way will I lie to you on this stuff. I feel like I gotta take a break, but I don't know what to play. I don't know what to play. Well, I'm going to play this because it pleases me.
Is it love of one's birthplace? The place of childhood's recollections and hopes, dreams and aspirations? Patriotism, sir, is the last resort of scoundrels.
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings.
From the best of times to the worst of times, through mixes, lies, and bushes, crimes. You remember 36 when we picked up different shifts. You fought for bullshit, and I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, but I'm in the forest rummaging for my lifetime. Cactus, the Goldilocks porridges. See me, what's that confused look? I'm just trying to say you burn it down like the fuse cooks. While you sit on a shelf inside, you call the cops for me, dude, impale them with the pie. They call it class war, but who the fuck's inferior? Damn right, this is war, I call it co-conspirator.
Baby, I'm an anarchist, your environment's liberal. We march together for the 8-hour day and our hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to throw bricks through the Starbucks window, you left me all alone.
You watch it all, it's the red, white, and blue on the 4th of July. Those fireworks were inspired, I was tired of burning that fucker. It's drinking my black flag high. Up the peanuts at the parties have tossed you in the back seat of the car. Looking at the rear view, you believe in the valley, you believe in reform. You would face an elephant, and that's our retort. And to you, solidarity is a four-letter word. We're all hypocrites, fucking absurd. But God bless, you're not God, this a patriot. So let's be honest, you ain't saving shit.
Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, your time is liberal. We march together for the 8-hour day, and our hands in the streets of Seattle.
Kill Whitey up the top of my lungs at the cops and the guns. I'm a fox and I run at these men in their suits. No, I won't take your hand and marry the truth.
Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, your assignment's liberal. We march together for the 8-hour day and our hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came down to throw bricks through the Starbucks window, you left me all alone. Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, your assignment's liberal. We march together for the 8-hour day and our hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came down to throw bricks through the Starbucks window, you left me all alone.
The centralization of power has brought into being an international feeling of solidarity among the oppressed nations of the world. a solidarity which fears not foreign invasion, because it is bringing all the workers to the point when they will say to their masters, go and do your own killing. We have done it long enough for you.
He knows what he wants, don't you, Rocco?
Sure.
What's that? Tell him, Rocco.
Well, I want,
he wants more.
Capitalist.
Don't you, Rocco?
Yes, capitalist.
More. That's right, I want more.
Will you ever get enough? Will you, Rocco?
Nope. Well, I never have. No, I guess I won't. You, do you know what you want?
Yes, and I had hopes once, but I gave them up.
Hopes for what?
I did.
A world in which there's no place for Johnny Rocco.
Johnny Rocco, go fuck yourself. I have not given up my hopes. I have not given up my hopes. No world without Johnny Rocco.
Through the best of times, through the worst of times, through the making out the bush. Should have a 36, but I step away to fuck with Stalin. I fought for freedom. We believe in authority. I believe in myself. I'm a moth of God, I am Dante. Our baby wants that. Confused look in your eyes. What I'm trying to say is back. I'll put down building while you stay on a shot. It's die again. Look all the gods on the looters and pythons. They got a glass bar. I got a judge of spiriters. Cause baby,
Speaking of the Bear Show, we are in the final quarter of the, it's not even quarter, final one-eighth of the two-hour program, 15 minutes. And I wanted to mention this, and I love the headline, and this is what got my attention. The headline was the attention. I was like, really? What? Huh? What? Because I don't follow sports. I don't care. I don't give a fuck. It's millionaires, and good for them, they're entertainers, you know, millionaires working for billionaires. And the deal is they're trying to get money out of the pockets of the thousandaires and hundredaires. It's bread and circus. It's bullshit. Yeah, it's, there's some, like, oh, look at this guy, how good he can pass. Look at this guy, how good he can catch and block. Look at this guy. Oh, he's a, you know, free safety. Oh, wow, that's great. It is nothing different than going to the Colosseum back in the Roman gladiator days and going, look at this guy, the way he handles this sword. Look at this guy, the way he uses his defenses to wear the other person down to then he can strike with a hard overhand or whatever. This is nothing. It's gladiator wars. These football players. And I've been following Noam for a long time, and I've actually heard him speak on this, but because I haven't heard it more than 3 or 4 times, it got lost in me. But here's the headline. And I like it. Take a drink. NFL, National Football League player quits because, comma, you know, Noam Chomsky. Of course. Yeah. You got a national football player, and he, you know, listened to Noam, talked to Noam, and of course he quit, right? Because Noam is right, football players are wrong. Now, I don't know. It was really kind of an interesting kind of thing. I looked at the headline. I said, okay, I got to look at this. And I'm glad I did. I'm really glad I did. So this is dude, John Moffitt. He plays in the NFL. He plays for the Broncos up in Denver, right? He's got a multi-million-dollar contract. Multi-million-dollar contract. That goes through 2014. And then after 2014, he could have made another $1 million for the next year, $1 million a year. This is a lot of money. Do you watch Breaking Bad? Do you understand how much? That's $1 million is 1,000. $1,000. It's a huge amount of money. You make $8.25 an hour, $7.15 an hour, $15 an hour. Oh, you make $23 an hour plus benefits? Good for fucking you. You'll never make that kind of money. So here's John Moffitt playing for the Broncos. Multi-million dollar contract. But guess what? He's not a fucking Nimrod. He's a little more intelligent. I don't even say intelligent. He's more, intelligence has nothing to do with it. He's curious. Somebody with a 72 IQ or 112 IQ. Guess what? If you're both curious, you can get this. He was curious. And he was reading Noam Chomsky. He was listening to Noam Chomsky tapes, arguments, YouTube talks, videos. He was doing the same stuff that I've been doing for 10 years. My professional football career, had I actually had one, would have been over 20 years ago. But, you know, that's a different story. So he's listening to Chomsky, and he's working out, perhaps pumping steroids. I'll just throw that in the mix. No evidence whatsoever. I'm just fucking around. But, you know, he's doing this thing. He's on this road. He's going to, like, beat people up on the football field and protect his quarterback or kill the other guy's quarterback. Whatever he does, I don't even know because I don't know what position John Moffitt plays. But the fact of the matter is while he was doing this, he was listening, reading Chomsky. And you know what? Here's a direct quote. Fuck it. Oh, no. I totally made that up. I'm sorry. I lied. I lied on the interwebs. I don't do that unless I'm going to come clean. He did not say, fuck it. But what he did say is, you know what? I don't want to play football anymore. I got this other stuff going on that's more important. I've been reading some Chomsky, a lot of it, which, of course, Chomsky is a gateway drug to other leftists, to other egalitarian thinkers. He's just one, right? So he's like, yeah, I played football in Wisconsin. I studied sociology. I was going to be some kind of public figure in philosophy. But you know what? Here's the deal, man. Now this football player, he's looking forward to speaking his mind on the radio. And he's got some podcasts. He's going to produce those. And he said he's got plenty of opinions to share on everything from philosophy to politics. But he says he doesn't have that much to say about sports. Oh, doesn't have that much to say about sports. Because it's not about sports, man. It's about life. How do you want to live your life? What do you want to do with your life? Do you want to, like, be a millionaire that works for billionaires so you can suck the money out of the wallets of thousandaires and hundredaires? Or do you want to do a radio show, a podcast, speaking events? Do you want to work towards class consciousness? So I like this guy. I think I'm going to have to send him an email. Yeah. Hey, John Moffitt, let's talk. I like it. I like it a lot. I think it's a great story. NFL player quits because, you know, Noam Chomsky. And the picture juxtaposed between this, like, really badass guy with a mustache and the goatee with the... He's got the hard goatee with a little bit of the beard, and it's long, thick hair, the big muscles, and the orange number 72 on the front. Juxtaposed to this old 85-year-old great-grandfather, maybe with the gray hair and the silver glasses and the spots, what do you call them, the sun spots, the age spots. Corduroy vest. Motherfucker that knows what's going on. I like it. I like it a lot. I really do. Alright, kids. It is getting that time. It's 1:52. I have another subject I could broach, but there's no way we can get to it. So rather than getting to part of it and going into overtime, I'm just going to say this. I appreciate everybody that came out in the chat room. You know who you are. Folks that listen to this show in a time-delayed sort of way, appreciate it. The Pink of the Bear Show, once a week. Wednesday morning, which is Tuesday night, but Wednesday morning, midnight Eastern Standard Time, 2 hours, just my musings on shit that was going on this week and going on for the last 200 or 300 years. That's all it is. And I hope you get something from it. I don't expect to, like, I don't know, get a bunch of apostles. I just want people to start thinking. Think critically. So that's why I do the show. It's basically agitating. Organizing, it's more agitating. I'll do organizing locally. Here in New York for the next few weeks, I'll go back to Reno. No plans on when to return to New York. It'll either be immediately or it'll be after 3 or 4 months working and getting some money together. We'll see. That's a personal thing. That's not to do with the show. Love you. Love you all. But I'm thinking I got to go. Let's go out as we have been going out for the last year, year and a half. Oh, next week, I'm going to have to talk about the Socialist Equality Party, the SEP. I went to a meeting here in New York, and I had some shit to say about it. But this other stuff took up the time, and I just can't get to it. But Socialist Equity, excuse me, Equality Party, the SEP. Look it up online. Talk, think about it. Next week, I'll talk about it. I went to a meeting of theirs. I talked to several people. It was an interesting, I'm glad I went. I'm glad I went, and I'll tell you all about it next week on the Pink of the Bear Show. I love you. I love you all. Let's sing that song.
Arise, ye workers from your slumber. Arise, ye prisoners of want. That's right. For reason in revolt now thunder. Chains of hatred, greed, and fear. Ha ha! Away with all your superstitions. Serve our masses, arise, arise. We'll change henceforth the old tradition and spurn the dust to win the prize. So comrades, come on and rally. Then the last fight, let us face. The international unites the whole darn human race. So comrades, come on, let's go rally. And the last fight, let us face. The international unites the whole darn human race. No more deluded by reaction. On tyrants only we'll make war. The soldiers too will take strike action. They'll break ranks and fight no more. And if those cannibals keep trying to sacrifice us to their pride, each at the force must do their duty, and we'll strike while the iron is hot. So comrades, come on, let's go rally, and the last fight let us face. The international unites the whole beautiful human race. So comrades, come on, let's go rally. Ha! And the last fight, let us face. The international unites the whole darn human race.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. I appreciate it. If you do not hear this live, hopefully you can hear it over at thecommonsprojectnetwork.com, thecommonsprojectnetwork.com. Bunch of lefty-leftist shows over there. You'll love it. If not, check out the Facebook page, Pinko the Bear Show. Actually, I think it is the Pinko the Bear Show page. The Pinko the Bear Show page at Facebook. All right, kids, I got to go. I got stuff to do. Babies to kiss, racists to run, ribbons to cut, capitalists to hang. I don't know. There's stuff to do tomorrow. So thanks for tuning in. Good night.